This morning for our sermon, we will be seeing the passion story through the eyes of those who witnessed it. This is from John, the son of Zebedee. It was a strange night filled with mystery. The Seder, or Passover meal, usually is somber at first, and then as more and more wine is served, we break into songs and celebration. But this Passover was different. There was a spirit brooding over the night. We took our places at the table, and then Jesus said something strange. "One of you will betray me tonight." It caused quite a commotion. What was he talking about? We were brothers, you know, all for one and one for all. Who would do such a thing? Again, there was a sense of foreboding as Jesus blessed the Elijah cup. There was a catch in his voice as he declared that he would not be celebrating this meal with us again until his Father's kingdom comes. I noticed a tear in his eye as he sang the hymn, and we headed to Gethsemane. He wanted to spend time there with his Father in prayer. We tried to stay awake. Truly we did. At first I heard him pouring out his heart to the Father. He was sincerely in pain. But then I drifted off. After drinking so much wine, well, the next thing I knew, he was waking us up, saying something again about his betrayer. But he seemed more at peace now. We heard a crowd of rabble-rousers coming, and suddenly we were surrounded by them, men who got paid to do the dirty work for the temple council. Their weapons were rough-hewn swords and sticks. But it was the look on their faces that was the most threatening thing of all. It seemed strange, but Jesus was completely calm. He did not look afraid. He spoke with Judas gently, and then Judas kissed him and betrayed him. What love Jesus still had for him. They grabbed Jesus and began to push him along. He did not resist. It was clear that we, his followers, were next. Being the youngest, I was confused. I didn't know which way to turn. My brother James grabbed me by the scruff of my neck and pulled me deeper into the forest. The night was long. No one slept then. The others tried to figure out where we should go to hide. We had lost track of Peter. I was just torn up inside. I wanted to be with Jesus. The next day, we learned that Jesus was to be crucified. It was the worst news ever. While the other disciples were afraid to come near Golgotha, my mother persuaded me to go with her. I did want to be with him so much. The soldiers there were relentless in mocking our helpless Lord. It was heartbreaking. Hadn't he suffered enough? They called him King of the Jews. They did it to mock him, but what they didn't realize was that it was the truth. All afternoon, a haunting darkness filled the sky. About 3 o'clock in the afternoon, we could see that Jesus' spirit was dying. I'll never forget the moment when he looked down on me and his mother Mary, saying, "Son, behold your mother. Mother, behold your son." From that time on, I took care of her just as I did my own mother. Over the years, we helped comfort one another. You know, I could see Jesus' eyes in her eyes, and it gave me peace.
as thy dying sorrow, thy pity without end. Oh, make me thine forever, and should I fainting be, Lord, let me
intrigued, confused, frustrated, torn, angry, afraid, shame. These words are the best way for me to describe my experiences with Jesus. I spent 3 years with him. I listened to his teaching, traveled with him, watched him do miracles, and went to numerous dinner parties with him. It's hard to describe what it was like to be with him, day in and day out. He was kind, generous to a fault, and even though he looked like us, and talked like us, there was something different about him. For a while, I was really sucked in by those teachings, a new twist on teachings I had heard all my life. And at the start of his teaching, things went fairly smoothly. However, Jesus had a real knack for ticking people off. And towards the end, I was frustrated with him, worried about what would happen if he continued teaching and acting the way he did. He would say the most obnoxious and disrespectful things to our high priests, to the elders. His teachings about the Sabbath, absolutely blasphemous. And everywhere he went, there was some sort of a scene. And I did not appreciate the danger he put us all in. The last straw for me was when he went on a rampage in the temple. He said all kinds of nasty things about our people's way of worship, and he called out the elders and the high priests in a way I've never heard before. I saw hatred in their eyes. I felt the same way in my heart. Something had to be done. So I found out where there was a secret meeting and offered to help them put an end to this rabble-rousing, this danger. They agreed to pay me 30 pieces of silver for helping them out, and it seemed like a fair price. I have to tell you, that scene at the Passover meal, that was downright uncomfortable. Until then, none of my friends knew what I was thinking. And when Jesus told everyone that I was the one that was going to betray him, I couldn't get out of there fast enough. Well, I ran straight to the authorities. I told them where they could find him so they could run him out of town. At least, that's what I thought they were going to do. What really happened was so horrible, I can hardly put it into words right now. Instead of just running him out of town, they turned him over to the Romans. I saw him flogged mercilessly, and he never even lashed out during that mock trial. When I heard his sentence, I was horrified. It was my fault that he was arrested and going through this. I crucified him. And my teacher didn't deserve that at all. I didn't see it coming. I thought they were just going to run him out of town. I went running to the leaders and tried to give them the money back. I didn't want any part of this anymore. They laughed at me and wouldn't take it back, so I just threw the silver at them. There are no words I can find to tell you what was going on in me at that point. The best thing that I can come up with is to tell you I knew I could never live with myself anymore.
The man, Jesus, looked harmless enough. In fact, he looked meek. Why were they bringing him to me in the middle of the night? There's too much drama around here. The temple council, the Sanhedrin, they had an axe to grind. Apparently, they saw this weak Galilean as a threat. He had a following, so I agreed to meet with him. They were out for blood, but it was clear they did not have their act together. One priest accused Jesus of having said he would tear down the temple and raise it back up in 3 days. This guy? He didn't even have anything to say for himself. I got down to the crux of the issue quickly. Tell us if you are the Messiah or not. You say so, he replied. Clever answer. But then he went on to reply, quoting the prophet Daniel, and saying of himself, "From now on, you will see the Son of Man coming in the clouds of heaven." I'd had enough. I tore my clothes in outrage. He had claimed to meet the Messiah in front of all of us. I asked the council what their judgment was. "Death," they said. I did not have the authority for capital punishment. "Take him to Pilate," I said.
As the Roman governor in Jerusalem, meant that I was responsible for keeping the Jews in their place. As long as I kept them under control, my job was secure. It sounds simple, but it's not. Those Jews were a complicated lot. At a time, I was dangerously close to having a full-scale riot on my hands, and I thought I'd be done for sure. Let me explain. Once, during an important feast, the Jewish leaders brought a man named Jesus to me. He was a charismatic rabbi, and I had my soldiers keeping their eye on him for some time. There were rumors floating around that said he would lead some great revolt against us, so it made sense for us to keep an eye on him. Soon after, Jesus' own leaders captured him, brought him to me, and demanded that I crucify him. I gave the rabbi a chance to defend himself, but he never answered my questions. I had never encountered that before. I simply couldn't figure out why those people would want him to die. He certainly didn't look threatening to me. I had a sense he was innocent, and he was probably a victim of some infighting. I got the sense the Jewish leaders wanted me to take care of one of the messes that they had created. I delayed them for a while to give myself time to think. If I sentence him to death, it would create even bigger problems with the Jews than we already had. If they rioted, I would be called to the carpet for it. And that is the last thing I wanted. So, I thought of a way of this predicament that would be a win for the both of us. I always released a prisoner this time of year. Yes, yes, that's it. I thought that if I gave the people a chance to choose between the hated prisoners, Barabbas and Jesus, they would definitely choose the mild-mannered Jesus over someone known for horrible crimes. When I was getting ready to make the announcement, my wife decided to get involved. It was completely unexpected. She sent me a message about some dream she had and told me crucifying Jesus would be a big mistake. It was unsettling. But I was sure the crowd would not want Barabbas on the street, and so I went ahead with my plan. Imagine my surprise when they chose Barabbas instead of Jesus. I tried to ask them again and again to tell me why, but the crowd was deafening. Over and over, louder and louder, they screamed, "Crucify him! Crucify him!" I had no choice at that point. It was either me or him. I wanted to make it clear that they were the ones making this choice, not me. So I had a basin brought in. I washed my hands in front of them. I told them that this decision was completely theirs, and I was innocent of any of his blood. I had him flogged for good measure. But after what happened, it was completely their responsibility. I'm pretty sure I saved my own neck and averted a full-scale riot that day. But I must say, the whole experience left me with a sense of unease.
Crucified my Lord, and he never said a mumbling word. They crucified my Lord, and he never said a mumbling word. Not a word, not a word, not a word.
Everything happened so quickly. We were all together for the Passover, sitting at a table and laughing and sharing stories of Passover from when we were children. The warmth and the joy of that moment evaporated into bewilderment
the moment that the Master spoke to us. He said one of us would betray him. Well, surely it isn't me, we all said. Who among us would do such a thing? I knew I would never betray my Master. A gloomy cloud hung over us as we watched Jesus lift up the bread and cup, saying that this was his body and his blood. He declared he would not drink of it again till we would be in his Father's kingdom. My mind could not grasp the words that had come from Jesus' mouth. I stumbled numbly into the cold night air as we left for the Mount of Olives. Then, stopping mid-journey, Jesus declared that we would all desert him tonight. I pushed out the words as if they were stuck in my throat. I would never desert you, Master. And that's when he turned to me with such a pained expression. He said I would deny him 3 times before the cock crowed. I wouldn't hear of it. First, he says one of us would betray him and we would all abandon him, and me, Peter, would deny him not once, but 3 times. I felt anger and disbelief that he would think such things about us, about me. I blurted out defiantly, even though I must die with you, I will not deny you. Everyone else gathered there said the same. He led us into Gethsemane, calling out my name along with James and John. We went with him to a quiet spot where he asked us to wait while he prayed. I'm not sure what happened, but the 3 of us fell asleep. And he tried to rouse us 2 times, and by the 3rd time, he just told us to go away. That's when I saw Judas, and he was with an armed crowd. He greeted the Master with a kiss. The crowd pressed in with drawn swords, but he willingly gave himself over to them. They took him to the high priest Caiaphas, and I followed at a distance. The rest of my brothers had scattered out of fear of being arrested with Jesus. When I got to the high priest's courtyard, I found myself sitting with the guards. What was I thinking? Was I afraid? Oh, indeed. But I wanted to know what would happen to him. I had to know. I could hear them angrily declaring the Master as a blasphemer and that he must be put to death. I lost myself in the conversation, forgetting that I was sitting with the very people who wanted to put the Messiah to death. And then it happened. A servant girl pointed at me and she declared, "This man was with Jesus the Galilean." She caught me unaware. What else was I going to do? "You're just a servant girl. What do you know?" I scoffed. "I wasn't with that man." Then it happened in rapid succession for a total of 3 times. Each time I became more desperate than the last until I cursed and proclaimed, "I don't know him." And the rooster crowed. He knew all along. He knew I would deny him. I chose my life, and I turned away and turned my back on the man that I had proclaimed to be the Messiah. What have I done? Will he forgive me? Why would he? Could he ever forgive me?
Thank you.
was the guilty who brought this upon thee. Alas, my treason, Jesus hath undone thee. 'Twas my Lord Jesus, I it was denied thee. I crucified thee.
I can say, I am a man without fear. I fear no one. I have faced death on many an occasion, and today was no different than others. Though I would prefer to face death with honor on the battlefield, we are trained, battle-hardened veterans. We are willing and ready to die for Caesar and for our generals. This detail of standing guard over the condemned is not what I envisioned in being a centurion. Crucifixions are a common affair. It's the way that we deal with reprobates, scalawags, and self-proclaimed messiahs. I've heard them sniveling and crying out for their mothers when they're lashed and hoisted up on the cross. They get no quarter from me as they are receiving their just deserts. I fear no gods. And I've heard the cries and pathetic pleas from those praying who have hung for days on the cross. But something happened to me this day. One of the three crucified that we nailed to the cross, he didn't struggle but cried out in pain when we stretched out his hands and drove the spikes through his wrists and ankles. We placed a sign over his cross proclaiming him Jesus, King of the Jews. The whole crowd mocked him in his dying hours. You saved others, save yourself, or let God deliver him now. And then he said nothing. Until 3 o'clock, he cried out, asking his God, "Why have you forsaken me?" And then a few moments, he cried out again and then breathed his last. His death wasn't particularly memorable. What was most unusual was how little time he was on the cross when he expired. Most men would take much longer, days even. But around noon, something curious happened. I watched as the skies darkened in the time Jesus was on the cross. And then the moment he breathed his last, the ground began to heave up in convulsions. Boulders split into two as if they were saplings snapped in half. There were those who reported people rising up out of the tombs, and the Jews themselves said their temple curtain was torn in two. I could see those around me begin to tremble in fear, and I must admit, and I am not ashamed to admit it, I too was afraid. For in that chaotic moment, my eyes were opened, and I proclaimed, "Truly this man was God's son."
Said a mumbling word. They nailed him to a tree, and he never said a mumbling word.